My buddy Paul went and applied for this office job, and he nailed the interview. Guy says, you've got all the qualifications. He says, you can start tomorrow at 8. Paul says, well, thank you for the job offer. There's just one thing I got to tell you. I don't have any balls. Guy says, awesome. You can start tomorrow at 9. Paul says, no, it doesn't affect my ability to work. I'll be in at 8. Guy says, well, all we do from 8 till 9 is stand around and scratch our balls anyway. Paul says, okay, and he comes in at 9 o'clock. Well, he's been working there for 2-3 months, and he's the top employee there. He's doing great. One day, he gets called into the office. Boss says, all right, Paul, you got to start coming in at 8 o'clock. He says, I thought you'd just stand around scratching your balls for an hour. He says, we do. He says, nothing's changed, but we just hired a guy yesterday with no arms.
I remember someone once asked me, what is the meaning of life? I said, life itself has no meaning. Life is an opportunity to create a meaning.
I'm leaving home for the coastline.
Today's word of the day is
abditive.
Definition: capable of hiding or concealing.
Persevere. Nothing worthwhile is easy. No one of achievement has avoided failure, sometimes catastrophic failures. But they keep at it. They learn from mistakes. They don't quit.
The key is what we do in our times of pain. Pain will change us. Heartache, loss, disappointments, they don't leave us the same. You can come out bitter, or you can come out better. You can come out defeated, giving up on your dreams, or you can come out with a new passion, a new fire, excited about the new opportunities in front of you. Don't just go through it, grow through it. That difficulty is an opportunity to get stronger, to develop character, to gain new competence. That pain is not there to stop you, it's there to prepare you, to increase you, to develop you.
You're going to hit a wall. That wall shocks some people. That wall stuns some people. That wall discourages some people. It's painful hitting that wall. But some people hit that wall, refuse to be denied. This person comes back anyhow, again and again and again. And then if you keep on hitting that wall, here's what happens to you. That you will have an incredible breakthrough. And it's as if the universe says, let's help him out. Come on. I admire that kind of tenacity. Let's give her a hand. This person doesn't care about the pain, because this person knows something. There's no gain without pain.
Everybody talks positive about themselves. Everybody talks like you a beast. You dress like you a beast.
But then when it's time to do what beasts do, you back up. You have an excuse. Innovation is reward. They give you a plaque for it. They give you a reward for it. But execution is worship.
Listen to me. There's no excuse. And what will separate those of you from the rest is not what they give you. What's going to separate you is what you do. Listen to me very closely. I want you to know there's only one equation that's missing. There's only one thing you cannot purchase. There's only one thing you cannot buy, and that's what real beasts do.
I ain't smart, but the difference between me and most people is he might be sweeter than me. He might be bigger than me. He might grind. Listen to me. I don't know. He might have money. I don't know where you come from, but you will not outwork me. Every single time. This is an opportunity of a lifetime, and I'm going to take advantage of it.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The remains of 3 U.S. service members killed by a drone strike while in their barracks at a base in Jordan returning to the U.S. at Dover Air Force Base today. President Biden and the First Lady, along with Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and the Joint Chiefs Chair C.Q. Brown, attending the dignified transfer, along with families of the fallen. The President and First Lady meeting privately with them earlier. ABC's Selena Wang has more.
He has already spoken to them over the phone, and we've learned that they all wanted the president president to come. That's not always the case. Sometimes it is contentious, but we're learning the families wanted the president to be there.
The comforter and commander-in-chief signaling a response to the deadly drone strike the U.S. says was carried out by Iranian-backed militants in Iraq. ABC's Martha Raddatz is in Amman, Jordan, and says the U.S. is expected to have a multi-level response while trying to keep tensions from escalating in the region further.
We've got fighting in the Red Sea. We've got fighting on the northern border of Israel. And we certainly have seen in Iraq and Syria these militias targeting Americans, American forces, well over 165 times.
The Georgia prosecutor bringing racketeering charges against Donald Trump and co-defendants and denies she's done anything wrong by having a personal relationship with a member of her team.
In court papers, attorney Nathan Wade acknowledges he has had a personal relationship with DA Fani Willis, but Willis insists the relationship with a member of her team does not amount to a conflict of interest. One of Donald Trump's co-defendants in the racketeering case has asked a judge to disqualify Willis because he alleged Wade has used money Willis's office has paid him to fund their vacations. In a sworn affidavit, Wade says the couple's travel expenses have been roughly divided equally. A judge holds a hearing on the matter later this month.
ABC's Stephen Portnoy. In a separate matter, the House Judiciary Committee issued a subpoena for Willis about her office's use of federal grant money. You're listening to ABC News. New details about the collapse of an Idaho airport hangar.
As Boise police and OSHA investigate why the rigid steel frame of the hangar that was being built gave way like a house of cards, bending the metal and collapsing in, the coroner in Boise has now released details of the three who were killed. They were 24, 32, and 59 years old. Their causes of death were all traumatic blunt force trauma from the accident. Nine more victims were injured, five critically. Alex Stone, ABC News.
U.S. regulators say they want to list certain so-called forever chemicals as a danger to human health.
In a statement, New Mexico officials called this a win in, quote, one of the most important environmental issues of our time. The EPA's new proposed federal rule classifying nine specific PFAS as hazardous comes after a long campaign from New Mexico officials after at least some of these PFAS were discovered in contaminated groundwater, likely, state officials say, caused by firefighting foam used at least two Air Force bases in the state. Jay O'Brien, ABC News, Washington.
In London, a judge has acquitted Greta Thunberg of blocking a major oil and gas conference. The climate activists and four co-defendants cleared of the criminal charge connected to an October 17th protest. The courtroom gallery erupting with applause. In Oslo, Norway, two people whose Tesla crashed into an icy fjord were rescued by users of a sauna boat. The BBC says that boat captain told a local paper soaking wet motorists were able to warm up. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
The following program can be heard across platforms such as Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And with that being said, the Ace of Alone Show starts right now.
Step I've ever taken in the wrong direction helped me get to where I am today and led to monumental moments in my life that I would not have got.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Mind Chatters number 33, Sunday, August 23rd. And took last week off. Apologize for those of you who like to tune in and listen. Been a busy summer, to be honest with you. But we're back on track now, and today I have an interesting subject to talk about. I mean, I think it's going to be kind of a short podcast. I got a lot of stuff to do today, but interesting and thought-provoking subject. Well, good morning, Asa. And what I want to talk about is an alternative translation, I suppose, of the story of the fall of mankind. Original sin is what they call it. And in the Christian Bible, the book of Genesis, You know, it tells of, you know, human and Earth's creation, you know, and part of that story is the situation in, it's chapter 2, verse 16 is where it starts, and also Genesis 3, which is kind of regarded as the moment where mankind fell from perfection by, you know, engaging in original sin. You know, so what was the original sin? Well, it was actually a complex series of things, not necessarily one single act. And as the story goes, Eve was tempted by the serpent to eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which, of course, was the one tree God said not to eat from, right? So Eve then convinced Adam to also eat of the fruit. And although it's not explained exactly how, it says in Genesis that, you know, instantly their eyes were opened, and they suddenly had knowledge that previously they did not. So as a result, God became angry at this disobedience and defiance of his command and banished them from the Garden of Eden. Right? He told them that they would be forever forced to toil and struggle, scratch out a meager existence from the earth, and no longer would they be able to eat freely from the garden. As for the serpent, most people believe he was either Satan or controlled by Satan. God said that for his role in this, he would be cursed forever to crawl among the dirt on his belly. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, I mean, I studied Christianity for many years, and I didn't always just take the parables and take the stories on its face. I thought about them. And sometimes my mind just kind of saw something different than the interpretations that they're usually given. And this is one of those instances. So this entire story of original sin sounded to me like something completely different than the usual interpretation that is given. All right, it's considered, you know, the quote-unquote fall of mankind. But I wonder if, in actuality, it could be considered the rise of mankind. And I wonder if the whole you know, eating the forbidden fruit debacle was a setup. And that's kind of what I mean by the choreography of original sin. Like, the whole situation was choreographed. And I wonder if the situation with the serpent wasn't manipulated, you know, or choreographed somehow by God himself. All right, a couple of things make me think this direction. I mean, first, God is understood to be all-powerful, omniscient. I mean, at least that's the understanding. That's right. He knew that Adam and Eve would disobey his command to not eat from that particular tree. All right, what we don't know from reading Genesis is how much time Adam and Eve were in the garden before being tempted. I mean, in other words, how many times had they obeyed God and ignored that very tree? And then the second thing that kind of makes me wonder about the original sin scenario is the fact that, you know, seeking knowledge is a theme that can be found scattered throughout the Bible. I mean, if you know your Bible at all, I mean, that is one of the, you know, prominent themes, is to always seek knowledge and wisdom of the scriptures, which is believed to be God's word. And so by extension, God himself, right? The Bible tells how knowledge and wisdom is far more valuable than gold and silver, right? God is the ultimate embodiment of the knowledge of good and evil, of knowledge itself, really. So it seemed to me that to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil would be akin to gaining knowledge of God himself, which, again, the Bible encourages. So how then could we possibly equate gaining knowledge with sin? But that's why I think the scenario with the serpent might have been choreographed. And I'll try to lay this out the best I can, but I think it may have been God's plan all along for humanity, for humankind, to gain knowledge. Because Adam and Eve, because they were so obedient, they needed a push. They needed a nudge. So perhaps God set up the situation, which allowed them to make a choice that they would not have made on their own. And even though the talking serpent is commonly, you know, attributed to Satan, I mean, maybe it was God in disguise, or maybe Satan was merely an accomplice, or else, you know, just doing what God commanded him to do. I don't know. But I find it odd that the serpent's punishment seems to be really no punishment at all. I mean, Genesis reads that it reads as if the serpent were cursed by God in front of Adam and Eve. But since, a serpent, you know what a serpent is? It's a snake. It's got no arms, it's got no legs. So the serpent was already a belly crawler. So for God to say, for your role in this serpent, you're going to be cursed to live your life as a belly crawler. Well, he already was. So was this scolding by God in front of Adam and Eve simply part of the facade, right? Part of the choreography, if you will, for Adam and Eve's benefit. And since the search for knowledge may have been what God wanted for humankind all along, I mean, could it be that the banishment from the Garden of Eden is simply like an instance of tough love? Right, the same as when, like a bird pushes his offspring out of the nest to teach it to fly. And you know, that's kind of how I saw the original sin story. So I mean, could it be that this is the basis for the original sin story, and early biblical scholars just did not interpret it right? I mean, did mankind truly fall, or were we pushed? You know, pushed from the nest, I guess. I mean, that's how birds learn to fly. And how much more knowledge can we accumulate and gain just by experience? And maybe this is the lesson of the Garden of Eden, right? Adam and Eve could only flourish, you know, so far because of their rigid obedience. In a sense, it kept them at a certain level, like a plateau. All right, they had everything they needed. God provided everything for their survival. So they essentially did not know how to take care of themselves. You know, perhaps being completely dependent on God actually stifled their growth. So, I mean, is that it? Is that maybe a correct interpretation? Through this crazy choreography with the serpent and everything. I mean, did God essentially throw Adam and Eve out of the garden to fend for themselves in the same way that, a father would throw his kid into the deep end of the pool to teach him to swim, right? So was God actually employing some sort of, you know, tough love method in order to teach independence? And if this is the way that things really happen, we might have to reconsider how Satan is thought of it, you know, and particularly his role in this story. I mean, after all, if you know the Bible at all, you know, we have another instance in the Bible where God and Satan kind of team up, you know, for the greater good. And it's called the Book of Job. And if you're not familiar with the Book of Job, it almost sounds kind of dastardly the way it's presented. Satan approaches God. This is kind of this is a little nutshell synopsis of the Book of Job. But Satan approaches God and he says, "Listen, your boy Job, I bet I can get him to curse your name." God's like, "Nope, nope, nope. He's one of my most faithful devotees. He would never do such a thing." And at the time, Job was one of the wealthiest men around. Big family, a lot of property, a lot of livestock. I mean, life was good. So Satan says, "Well, of course he's not going to curse your name right now. You've given him everything, prosperity, health, wealth, you know, family, you know, et cetera. But you let me take a crack at this guy and he'll curse your name." God says, "Nah, I don't think he will, but I tell you what, you go ahead and you do what you do. You take a shot at him, but you can't kill him." Satan says, "Fair enough." And reading the Book of Job, this guy went through the ringer. Job had so much devastation cast upon him by Satan. I mean, a house fell on his children, lost all of his wealth. He had a horrible skin disease he was afflicted with. His wife turned on him. A bunch of friends turned on him saying, you know, where's your God now? How can you, you know, how could God let this happen to you? Why don't you curse his name? And Job, he stood hard. He's like, nope, I still love God. You know, he goes, I maybe question his methods, but he had some friends coming up to him saying, listen, this only happens to evil people. So you have to, what did you do? You know, and this went on for a while. And finally, he refused to curse God's name. And then in the end of the book of Job, I mean, God kind of rewarded that faithfulness and that loyalty by restoring his health, restoring his wealth. And he had another big family. And, you know, this is back when everybody lived to like 800 years old. And that was kind of the moral of the story, I suppose, you know, kind of good versus evil and, trust in God and he'll take care of you, that kind of thing. Even in the face of suffering. So, like I said, I mean, you know, God and Satan kind of teamed up for that, book of Job. So, I mean, was that what was really going on with the original sin story as well? I mean, it was the serpent or Satan merely enlisted as a tool to help realize God's true plan, which would be like man's search for knowledge. So when the first instance of temptation didn't work, I mean, that first instance being God's comment to eat freely from all of the trees in the garden, except that one. And if that was truly supposed to be off limits, why was it in the garden in the first place? You know, and maybe it was to teach the concept of temptation. We don't know. Now, Christians believe that because of Adam and Eve's original sin, you know, their fall, all of mankind was forever cursed to be inherently sinful by nature. I mean, their sin wasn't simply the disobedience. It was also succumbing to the temptation by a creature that they were supposed to have dominion over, right? God created Adam, then created Eve out of the rib of Adam, and he gave them dominion over all creatures on earth. So to allow a creature that they were supposed to be ruling over to tempt them in this way, it was pretty bad. But that brings up a couple of points. I mean, first, think about the talking serpent. I mean, if it wasn't Satan, where did it come from in the first place? I mean, did God create talking animals? I mean, I don't know. If you read deep into the Bible, you could maybe see the possibility. I mean, it seems at least plausible if you read like Proverbs in 16:4. It says that God made all things for a purpose, even the wicked for days of trouble. So, I mean, that would kind of categorize this talking serpent, I suppose. And second, I think that the way that I've seen the original sin story, I think it kind of dispels the belief that man is inherently sinful and rotten to the core. To interpret the story of the garden as Adam and Eve were so inherently good and obedient that they had to be tempted twice to break God's command, I mean, that's certainly contrary to the mainstream interpretation of original sin. And the Bible is silent on how long Adam and Eve were actually in the garden. So in other words, how many times did they walk past that particular tree and never touched it? And that's kind of why I think maybe this whole thing was a setup. It was choreographed. I mean, they actually had to be tempted from an outside party to do what they did. And again, if we believe that God himself knows everything, he knows what's going to happen, he knows your entire life cycle before you even are born, then he knew that they would succumb to the serpent. He knew that, for example, they would have probably lived their lives in the garden completely obedient. And that's kind of what made me think about, you know, the angle of the tough love and trying to teach them independence. I mean, he already provided everything for them. And even, we can still see that today. If you provide everything for somebody, you know, they're never going to learn on their own. They're never going to be an independent creature. I mean, I'm kind of reminded of the old teach a man to fish, you know, that whole thing. Give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach a man to fish, he eats for a lifetime. I mean, maybe it's the same concept with this Garden of Eden story. I don't know. But that's kind of where I wanted to take this today. I mean, it's been a while since I've done any kind of religious concept, but again, you know, I mean, when you read through the Bible and you have these alternative explanations, I suppose. I mean, I wrote some stuff down. I came away with that, the reading of that, just a little different. And it's true. I mean, we parents do that with our children, even today. You know, we raise them and we teach them the best we can. And then eventually they have to go off on their own. They have to be independent. They have to be able to take care of themselves. And I kind of wonder if that's maybe the story behind the original sin. Not necessarily that humans are inherently sinful and prone to temptation and all that. I think that just tends to breed a systematic guilt, I suppose. But anyway, that's where I'm going to leave it today. I told you it's going to be kind of a short one. I got stuff to do, so I'm going to get off here. And I appreciate you guys tuning in, listening to my spiel. But anyway, I hope it was thought-provoking for you. And everybody have a wonderful Sunday. Enjoy your summer.
In Georgia, I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News. It's in a court filing about Fulton County DA Fani Willis and Nathan Wade, the special prosecutor Willis hired to assist her election interference case against former President Trump and others. Today's filing says Willis and Wade are involved in a personal relationship, but she argues there are no grounds to dismiss the case. And Wade says no money paid to him has been shared with Willis, who's facing claims of misusing taxpayer money. A judge has already set a hearing date later this month to hear from Willis. New York's governor attending a meeting of prosecutors, including the Manhattan DA, who's facing questions about a judge's decision to release several migrant suspects without bail in last week's assault on police officers in Times Square.
NYPD continues to look for others involved in the initial attack. My police sources say some of the migrant suspects, rather, who've already been arrested and arraigned in this case, may now have skipped town, have boarded a bus headed for Calexico, California, which, by the way, borders Mexico. The Manhattan DA's office not saying too much on this, only saying they're still investigating the circumstances.
Fox's C.B. Cotton. The Justice Department announcing charges against 9 suspects accused of helping Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps to evade sanctions. Charges including terrorism for most of the defendants and money laundering offenses in connection with selling Iranian oil to government-affiliated buyers in China, Russia, and Syria. This, as President Biden attends the dignified transfer of remains after a drone attack blamed on Iran proxies that killed 3 American soldiers last weekend. A surprise in the jobs report, 353,000 added in January.
A low unemployment rate, this hotter than expected jobs number, will likely mean the Federal Reserve will not be cutting rates in March. This further gives them fuel to go that direction.
Fox Business's Edward Lawrence. America is listening to Fox News. A federal judge dismisses a county election official's lawsuit challenging North Dakota's mail-in ballot counting law.
The Burleigh County auditor suing North Dakota's election director to block the counting of mail-in ballots received after Election Day. Filed by the conservative group, the Public Interest Legal Foundation, the suit argued federal and state law conflict with when such ballots have to be turned in, claiming officials risk criminal penalties. A U.S. district judge dismissing it, finding the county auditor did not allege a specific constitutional violation and that the state election director named is not a potential cause for alleged injuries because she has no enforcement authority. GOP State Secretary of State Michael Howe calling the ruling a win for the rule of law in North Dakota and a win for our military and overseas voters. Kristen Goodwin, Fox News.
On Sunday, she's a Grammy nominee, but today, country star Lainey Wilson has been at a congressional field hearing in L.A. about artificial intelligence and the music industry.
My art is uniquely and literally me. My name, my likeness, my voice.
Scammers used AI to fake her likeness in weight loss commercials. There have been viral songs using AI versions of other artists. Chris Moore, president of the Software and Information Industry Association, says the ability to create sexually explicit deepfakes is new.
Congress did pass a statute to address this problem as part of the Violence Against Women Act, as applied to revenge porn. But its application to deepfakes is at best ambiguous.
Tennessee has a first-in-the-nation proposal to make it a crime to clone an artist's voice or likeness. There's now a rally on Wall Street after a choppy start. The Dow's up 167. The Nasdaq's up more than 200. Oil prices are sinking down below $73 a barrel. And Lisa Brady, Fox News.
If you guys enjoyed that episode, do me a favor. Leave me a 5-star rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Audible. Or however many stars you think I deserve. And until next time, I'll catch your asses down the road.
Grab a clue, what could that be? They tell me that I'm never gonna make it. They want me to do something that can make sense. They hate when I keep dreaming I'll be famous.
But I don't give a fuck, I'm gonna keep chasing.
They tell me that I'm never gonna make it. They want me to do something that can make sense. They hate when I keep dreaming I'll be famous.
But I don't give a fuck, I'm gonna keep chasing.
I think this life could be special if I get rid of the devils. They think that I am a rebel. I think they want me to settle. There's nobody on my left.